السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا. أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون. صدق الله العظيم. Respected brothers and also our sisters, those who are listening over the receivers, you are well aware that this program is specifically for those that are in itikaf. And by the way, if somebody else also benefits, then alhamdulillah. It doesn't mean that whatever is for the benefit of those people that are in itikaf, others will find no benefit in it. There are so many other issues which are discussed, which are of benefit to everyone. Yesterday we discussed so many issues about mujahada, what is mujahada, and how beautiful shariat is, how beautiful are the teachings of the Quran Sharif and Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that it accommodates the needs of all times and the needs of all people and the needs of people of different temperaments and of different status and position in society and of different levels of economic wealth and prosperity. For different kinds of people, they will find an example in the teachings of the Quran, and or they will find an example in the life of Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam or his companions. There will be examples for the very rich and there will be examples for the very poor. There will be examples of those who were companions of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and then they were even given government and they ruled over vast territories and they lived in those countries where in those days it was considered as the modern civilization. As we say, it was a modern civilization or modern culture. So the Sahabas moved to those foreign lands where they had to go to such societies. Now there too there was example for them. Now when we look at their lives, that how did they live in those countries? Did they go there and become like those people, or did they make those people like them? The Sahaba Kiram radiallahu anhum ajma'in, they also went to foreign lands. Islam came to Africa, Islam went to China, Islam went to Europe, Islam went different places, and then Islam spread throughout the world. But the Sahaba Ikram during their days, to whatever extent the areas of land that they reached, what did they do there? We will find an example that they went to those countries and those places also where there was great amount of wealth and prosperity, and there was the culture that we consider as modern culture. So what did they do there? Did they go there and they said, we must integrate, which is a common word today, we must integrate. So what did this integration mean? That they went there and became like them? They said that because we have come to your country and your style of living is different and you are in the majority, so we also want to become like you. Did they do that, or did they go there and change the conditions of those places? If we have to look at history, the Sahaba Ikram radiallahu anhu ajma'in, wherever they went, they not only changed the culture of those people, even their dressing changed, even their language changed. In Africa, where there was the Arabic language. If you have to look at all Egypt, Morocco and Algeria and all these places, where there was Arabic. If you have to look at Comoro Islands and all, where there was Arabic there. And if you have to look at other parts of the Middle East and all, where there was Arabic. So wherever they went, they not only changed their dressing but even the language and everything of the people, and they made the majority of them into Muslims. So what I was saying is that the teachings of Islam are very beautiful. Yes, I was saying that although this program is specifically for those that are in i'tikaf, but it does not mean that others will not get any benefit in the program. So even if our sisters are listening, and some of them are listening, so they too will learn from this incidents or the examples which are given, or the discussion which takes place, for example yesterday's discussion on Mujahada and all the details. So today what I wish to discuss, I was thinking of what to talk on, and just now coming through to into the masjid, something that I discussed very briefly last year came to mind, and that is that if we have to look at Shariat, then because we were discussing Mujahada yesterday, so it's like a follow-up and an extension of that. That the akabir, the mashayikh, the awliya, and those people who were engaged in islah in those days, so they used to make the murids go through four kinds of mujahada. تقليل الطعام وتقليل الكلام وتقليل الاختلاط مع الأنام. Three kinds of mujahada. They used to ask them to reduce their food intake. First mujahada they used to make, tell them reduce your food, don't eat too much, because when the person's belly is full, then there's nothing but laziness. The person becomes lazy, doesn't have the himmat to do anything. After overeating, what does the person want? Sleep. So they used to make them reduce their food. They used to tell them that now you mustn't eat too much. You mustn't eat so little that you collapse and you cannot do anything, and neither must you eat so much that you become lazy and do nothing. There must be a balance. Because if this belly is going to be a little empty, then the fountain of wisdom will burst forth in that heart. But if the belly is always full, then the person's mind will be clouded, and then the animal instincts will surface. That is the reason that those people who are starving, you do not find them worry too much about the other animal instincts. If a person is dying of starvation, and at that time if somebody has to tell that person that what would you like at this stage of your life now, that illicit beloved of yours if I bring, would you like that, would you like her to come now in this stage of your life, or do you want food? Now that beloved whose song he was singing all the time, and his sleep he was not getting, and he was experiencing a restlessness, but now in this state when he is hungry, then at that time he will say that in this state of starvation and hunger, even if you can get me half a slice of bread, I will appreciate that more than that pretty face. Now why did he give preference to that bread? Because his stomach is empty. So the animal instincts are more or less dead. So they used to make them make taqleel of ta'am first. Because the majority of the people who are all the time engaged in eating, so this is what happens, that laziness comes over. They don't have the strength after that to make any ibadat. It's fajr time they want to sleep, zohar time they want to sleep, every time it is sleep. We are not talking about those who are sick and weak and feeble, or due to some illness they they remain in bed. I'm talking about the healthy people. If a healthy person also overeats, then it makes him sleep. So the first mujahada that they should make them make was taqleel al-ta'am, that you must reduce your food. Now in this aspect also some went to extremes, that in some places where there was no kamil sheikh, the person was not one who was kamil, so he made those people make such mujahada that you mustn't eat this, mustn't eat that, mustn't eat that, and made the person extremely weak. Now that was also not according to Sharia. So they were both extremes. Either the person were eating too much or they were eating too little after that. Now we know that even in these days when a person is going on diet, and especially those women who are very particular about diet, and some of them go to such extremes that they fall sick and ill. And they suffer from different kinds of sicknesses. Because some go to such lengths, as we read sometimes in some article, they go to such lengths that they eat food and then they thrust their fingers down and vomit it out. Now is there insaniyat? That if they kept a balance in their eating and drinking, they wouldn't have had to go through such kind of pain and problem. So Shariat is something in which there is a balance. In Shariat, everything is in balance. In Ibadat, balance. Tilawat, balance. Zikr, balance. Charities and donations also, there is a balance. Even there, neither do you give so much that you become poor yourself and then start extending your hands for begging. And neither do you give so little that you fall in the category of the misers. So again, there must be a balance there. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ وَالْإِحْسَانِ. When I was discussing adl, that balance, that is fairness or justice, it applies right through. So for those people, for their islah, this was the first thing that they should recommend, تَقْلِيلُ الطَّعَامِ, that they must reduce their meals. They must eat less. The second thing was taqleelul manam. They must sleep less. They must eat less and they must sleep less. They must not be all the time sleeping. Because they are in a khanqa or because you are in the masjid in atikaf, another person is sleeping all the time. Many times a person, he goes out for some deen work, and afterwards most of that time is spent in sleeping. So it must not be that the maximum amount of time is spent in sleeping. The person must sleep less, especially the nights. He must sleep a little at night and then engage himself in zikr, tilawat, ibadat, duas, tahajjud, begging of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So that was the second category of mujahada. The second category was a reduction in sleep. That means if the person was sleeping 8 hours, so now he sleeps 6 hours. If he was sleeping 6 hours, then he must sleep 4 hours or 5 hours. But there must be some reduction for the purpose of islah. And the third thing was taqleelul ikhtilati ma'al anam, a reduction in the meeting of people. Meeting of people, there must be a reduction. Meeting of friends, meeting of people, there must be a reduction. Now these were the three main categories of mujahada that people that used to go for reformation and change were made to undergo. Because this majlis is, as I said, specifically for those that are in atikaf, therefore I am mentioning these things. But of course it has to be understood in its proper context. So they used to make them make this mujahada. Now it did not mean that they were being cut off from the outside world, or they were cut off from food and drink, or they must not have any kind of sleep. No, it was all a question of reduction. That means you must change your pattern. Now that you are saying that you want Islah and you want to change and you want a reformation and you want a purification of this heart and soul, so then the person has to do these three things, that he has to reduce his food intake, he must sleep less. Yes, one more thing, the four mujahada, I was just wondering which one I'm sleeping on. The other one was taqleelul kalam, that your speaking must be lessened, your talking must be lessened. So the food intake must be lessened, the talking must be lessened, the sleeping must be lessened, and also your meeting with the people, this must be reduced. Now these were the four mujahadas. Now as I stated that in some khanqas and some places, people used to go on to extremes now. That hunger, now they're going on to, instead of lessening, they went on to extremes. When it came to sleep, then they slept so little that they got dehydrated. When it came to talking, they shut their mouths altogether. Now they're not even talking to the family properly. They're not talking to the children properly. They're not even replying to a person salam properly. Because they say we have reduced our talking. Or ikhtilat ma'al anam, meeting the people, so they reduced it to such an extent that they forgot about visiting their parents also. If the parents were living somewhere else, so now they say, no, we are in i'tikaf all our lives now. So now they don't go and meet parents. They don't meet their uncles. They don't meet their nephews. They don't even know who the family members are. So they went on to another extreme in the meeting also. So these were the four mujahadas which Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala in a very beautiful way put it for us in i'tikaf. If you look at these four mujahadas, it has been given to us in this capsule form in the month of Ramadan, in the last 10 nights or some places 20, and for some people even 30 days in Ramadan when they make i'tikaf. Then these four mujahadas become extremely easy. If you take all four, they become extremely easy in Ramadan and especially in i'tikaf. Now take yourselves when you are in i'tikaf. That is provided, of course, you observe the etiquette of i'tikaf, which I have been explaining over the past 2-3 days. So now if you take eating, for example. Now in the month of Ramadan, automatically your eating is reduced. The person will have sehri and his next meal is going to be iftar. Even if he eats more than the normal limits, sehri time and iftar time, but still, if you have to look at it, there is this reduction, or there is a complete change of the time. And when there's a change of time also, it has an effect. It has an effect on the person, that when it comes to lunch time, now the person who was used to a heavy lunch all the time, nice, he will feel at that time some sort of desire to eat. Or the person who used to have a good breakfast and then leave for work, now when it will come breakfast time, there will be some desire to eat. Or after working for some time in his business, because we are sitting in i'tikaf, so we do not know what people go through when they are working. A person who is on his feet all the time, and he's got a boss also who is in some other world, so he increases his workload in Ramadan instead of decreasing it, then ask those people what they go through. Just the other day a person said that he has to work out in the field. He's doing some surveys and things like that for some company. And when one of those days was very hot, he says in that heat he just had to break his fast because it was so hot and he was dehydrated. So now must he keep qaza or kafara? Now these type of questions, why do they come about? Because that person was working in such an area, in such a place where he was feeling very thirsty. So we must look at the general public. We must not just look at our own condition and say, no, but I don't feel hungry even breakfast time and even lunch time. I don't feel anything. I don't even feel thirsty too. If the person is sleeping all the time, where is he going to feel thirsty and hungry? If the person got up, made sehri, had a good sehri also. If his normal breakfast was two slices of bread, then this sehri of his was chicken and samosas and bhajiyas and everything, and he loaded his stomach. And after sehri went to sleep. And some of them sleep through fajr also, because they've had such a heavy sehri that even the fajr after that goes in their sleep. But if the person makes fajr namaz and after that sleeps, because he got no work, he doesn't go to business, he doesn't go to the farm, he doesn't go to marketing, nothing. What he does is after his fajr namaz, now he's gone to bed. And he gets up only zohar time. So zohar time he gets up, makes zohar namaz, and then he says that now we heard Maulana say that instead of talking, it's better to sleep. So now he takes a pillow and he's gone off to sleep again. So now will this person feel hungry or thirsty? Now if he says that, no, I never felt hunger or thirst. Say, but how are you going to feel hunger and thirst? Unless, of course, in the dreams, he gets dehydrated. Because although he's working in air-conditioned office, but in his dream, he dreamt that he's working out in the field somewhere in Saudi Arabia, and it is 55 degree heat, and then he got dehydrated in his sleep. Well, that we can accept. But otherwise, he's not going to feel sleepy. I mean, he's not going to feel thirsty or hunger. So this is for those people who are living a normal life, or they have to go for work and they are in the outside world, and the majority are there. At present, how many are in Aitikaf? If you have to take all the masjids of the world and then compare it with the population, Muslim population, how many percent are in Aitikaf? So we must not see our condition and say, no, but we're not feeling thirsty, no hunger. We must make shukr of Allah Ta'ala that He relieved us of that. Those activities that the people are going through. We must make a lot of shukr that Allah Ta'ala gave us that kind of opportunity to be in His house in comfort with fans on and aircon on and good food to eat and sufficient. So we must make shukr. But we must look at the condition of the people outside. So taqleel of ta'am, a reduction in the eating, will automatically take place. And if it is not a reduction because the person ate a little more, then when he's going to go out and work, he's going to get burnt up. And then by the time it comes lunch time, then the person is hungry or he's thirsty. So Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, via this fasting and aitikaf, brought the first mujahada very easy, that he changed the time. That you have your sehri, and the next thing is iftar. And in some countries it is 18 hours, 19 hours, and even goes up to 20 and 21 hours. And it is just not possible for the non-Muslim to understand that how can this person be still fasting and he's working. They can't understand, especially in those countries where sometimes it goes up to 20, 21 hours. So a person is only, or he just has 4 hours or so in which he must make his Isha namaz too, he must make his some Tarawih too, and he must make Sehri again too. This side the sun sets, and within a few hours again it is sunrise, or Subuh Sadiq. In America, in England, I remember in Dublin when I went there some years ago. So for the Isha namaz, they said the Isha namaz here is at 11:15 at night. Now 11:15 was Isha. The Maghrib was at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock at night was Maghrib Salat. So after Asr, then you can go to sleep and you can get up and then make your Maghrib Namaz and wait for another 1 hour or two and you can make your Isha Namaz. And then you wait for another 2 hours and you can make your Fajr Namaz. So after Isha, we used to sit and talk or have some kind of majlis. And at 2 o'clock morning was again Fajr time, Subuh Sadiq time. So immediately after Subuh Sadiq we used to make our Fajr and then go to sleep. So now imagine fasting in those conditions. And Alhamdulillah, those people whom Allah Ta'ala has blessed with Iman and Yaqeen and Faith, then Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala gives them the tawfiq of fasting even in those days. Because as I mentioned the other night here, that it is our niyat which makes it easy for us to fast. That niyat is something that binds you. And then if you abstain from sins, then Allah Ta'ala makes that fast also easy. It is the experience of large number of people. All the awliya, of course, and even sinners like us, that try it out. The day that you stay away from sins, you don't make ghibat, you don't cast lustful glances at women, you don't listen to haram, you don't enter into any argument with anybody, you are tolerant, you are patient. If you do these things, then even if that fast is of 20 hours, it becomes easy to keep it. Allah Ta'ala makes it easy. But the person who indulges in ghibat, straight away in his stomach, there's a churning, and the person starts feeling hungry. The more ghibat he makes, the more hunger he will feel. The more sins he indulges in, the more hunger and thirst the person will feel. I'm talking about those who are outside. Again, don't think of those that are sitting in the masjid. Because they will say, no, we made plenty of ghibat, nothing happened to us, we didn't feel hungry too. How can you feel hunger? Because after making ghibat, you went to sleep. So this is what we term as taqleelu ta'am, that the person has been made to reduce his food via fasting automatically now. So that mujahada, that first part of the mujahada, which was reduction of food, is taking place. By this changing of times, there's already a reduction. And of course, drink goes with it. Because if somebody says that, no, I don't eat food, I only survive on drinks, all kinds of juices, like many people in other faiths, they say they are fasting. The Hindus and others, sometimes in their fast, the things that they have to abstain from is some eggs and some meat. Now that's their fast. Now that kind of fast we can keep all the year round. If we have to tell a Muslim that, look, fast is compulsory upon you, Allah Ta'ala made it compulsory, and the only thing you have to do now in this fast is make sure that your biscuits don't contain any eggs and your fruit cakes don't have any eggs. You must only eat fruit, vegetable, and milk you can drink plentiful too, and the juices of all fruits also you can have any part of the day and night. The only thing you mustn't do is eat meat and stay away from eggs. So only if that Muslim has got no iman at all, although he's a Muslim, but it's extremely weak iman, then he will say, no, I can't even keep this kind of fast. If not, then I think 99.999% of the Muslims will be fasting, irrespective of which month of the year it is, in which country it is, and what kind of climate it is, but the person will fast. Because what is difficult in that? Just the other day I had somebody to do some repair, so I offered him something. So he said, no, I won't have the biscuit, I will only have the juice and the popos and the fruit, whatever was there, because I'm fasting. So he was fasting, but he had sufficient amount of fruit and juice and milkshake, everything was okay, but he was fasting. So now we appreciate that at least he was fasting. To some extent he was keeping his fast. But now, is this fast difficult? So in Islam or Sharia, that first stage of that mujahada, because it is for you who are in itikaf, so the first stage of this mujahada was that taqleelu ta'am, which Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala made it automatic for us, made it easy for us, that the person is eating less in Ramadan. The change of time also has made it a mujahada. Even if he eats the same amount of food too, but then the change of time, it is a mujahada on its own. Because a person's habit, to change that habit is mujahada. Mujahada is also one of the meanings, that the habit of that person is changed. The habit was to have breakfast and then have lunch and then have supper, and in between also some chocolates and biscuits and teas, 10 o'clock tea and 3 o'clock tea. So now that habit is changed, so that's a mujahada. So now in Ramadan, that first thing is taken care of, taqleelul ta'am. Then taqleelul kalam, to reduce your talking. Because we are in the habit of just talking, talking, talking all the time. With friends, we just talk unlimited. Our speeches have no end. And in that talk, after that, we engage in ghibat, we engage in carrying tales, we engage in gossip, we engage in so many other kinds of sins. So this talking had to be reduced as a mujahada for reformation purposes, for change of the condition of the heart. Because when a person engages in too much talk, then zulmat comes into the heart, darkness comes into the heart. We don't even realize it because our hearts are already dark. So what more darkness can come in there? If a person is working in a garage and his overall is black, he's wearing a black overall, and then he's working under the car. So now if there's some grease that falls on his clothes or black spots, then he won't notice it because the overall is black, pitch black. Where is it going to show? But if that person had to wear a white overall and go under the car, then just one spot and it will be picked up from a distance that that person has got a black spot on his white overall. Oh, now that those that are wearing white clothes, even from a distance you can pick it up that the person has got ink marks on his clothes. So because of the blackness of our hearts, because of the darkness of our hearts, we can't seem to pick up these black spots of sins. We can't pick it up. We indulge in sins upon sins and we get no darkness in our heart because there's no place left for darkness. The whole thing is dark. Hazrat Bilal radiallahu ta'ala anhu was a black person. He was an Abyssinian slave. His skin was dark, but his heart was white, pure white. That is why Hazrat Bilal radiallahu ta'ala anhu got such a high status and position. So it is not the color of the skin, and it is not the physical heart also, because the physical heart, when Chris Barnard took out the first heart for transplant, and after that so many other hearts that he took out and transplanted. So whether the heart was of a Muslim or it was of a Christian or of a Jew or of a Hindu or of anyone else, there was no difference in the color of those hearts. Was there a difference in the color? Now when we talk about black heart and white heart, so does it mean that those people who were pious and righteous, when their hearts were taken out of their bodies, it was white in color? And those who were sinning, then it was black in color. The color was the same. So we're talking about the spiritual heart. That when the person engages in too much of talk, then the spiritual heart becomes dark. There's a zulmat, a darkness comes in there. And any person who has reformed himself and brought about some change, and he has brought about a kind of awareness of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, and he has made his islah through exercises of zikr and talim and ibadat and whatever other dini activities they may be. So the person has improved the condition of his heart. Person went out in jamaat, made gush, talim, zikr, tilawat, ibadat, whatever it is. Or he went to a khanqa and there he made some zikrullah, and he made tawbah and istighfar and all that. So now if the person has improved the condition of his heart, then he will sense this zulmat. The moment he talks too much, he'll sense zulmat inside. That is the reason why some of our mashayikh, for hours on end sometimes, they should just sit quiet, nothing, no talk with anybody. The majlis is taking place, but there's silence in that majlis. All are just sitting, that's all. But those who are sitting also, they find something is happening in their hearts. The noor that is generated from those hearts of the Ahlullah, then it has an impact on the hearts of the listeners. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has kept that sifat in those hearts. There is a noor that is generated from there. And when it goes out, it permeates. And the people who have their nostrils and their sinuses unclogged, I mentioned in one majlis, that when do you benefit from the Ahlullah? When your sinuses are unclogged. There are three conditions. Firstly, that person must be a genuine Ahlullah. He must not be imitation. If the person is just a pretender, although it's marked 24 carat gold, but it's not even 9 carat. Or there's no fragrance at all in that person's life itself. So where is he going to give fragrance? Or if that flower is there, but that flower is made of paper. Kis kaam ka wo gul hai, jis gul mein bu nahi. Kis kaam ka wo dil hai, jis dil mein tu nahi. Kis kaam ka wo dil hai, jis dil mein tu nahi. Kis kaam ka wo gul hai, jis gul mein bu na ho. Kis kaam ka wo dil hai, jis dil mein tu na ho. Kis kaam ka wo gul hai, jis gul mein bu na ho. O Allah, of what use is that heart in which you are not there? You may call it a heart, but O Allah, if you are not in that heart, then it is not worthy of being called a heart. Dogs have hearts, cats have hearts, monkeys have hearts, and even pigs have hearts. But nobody has called a monkey Ahle Dil. Nobody has called a monkey or a donkey or a cat or a lion Ahle Dil. Only those people are called Ahle Dil in whose hearts Allah is there. They've got Allah in the heart, then they are Ahle Dil. So he says, Kis kaam ka wo dil hai, ke jis dil mein tu na ho. Oh my beloved Allah, what kind of a heart is that in which you are not there? Kis kaam ka wo gul hai, jis gul mein bu na ho. And what is the sense of saying that it's a flower, if that flower doesn't have fragrance? If that flower doesn't have fragrance, and what is the sense of calling it a flower? So first of all, it must be a flower with fragrance. In other words, that person, he must be a true wali of Allah Ta'ala. He must be from amongst the Ahlullah. That means he must be a possessor of that fragrance of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala's qurb and muhabbat. When he's a possessor of that fragrance, then you cannot hold back that fragrance. Even if that person is sitting silently, that fragrance is going to permeate in the room. It's going to spread. The Raat Ki Rani flower, which is very famous, when there's a gentle breeze, then that fragrant smell of the flower at night, it is carried to distant lands. People far away also, they say from somewhere the fragrant smell of flowers is coming. Beautiful fragrance. People in India and other places where there's not much crime, then they sleep outside, just near those trees where this Raat Ki Rani flower is, so that they get that beautiful fragrance. And it doesn't give any speech. The flower doesn't give any speech. It's that fragrance which goes into the nostrils of the people. And it brings happiness and joy into the hearts. In the same way, when this heart will become the recipient of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala's love, then the fragrance of this heart will then go far and wide. People in different parts of the world will after that smell that fragrance. Look at our akabir and our mashayikh and our buzrugs, so many of them. They didn't go everywhere in the world. Sometimes they were sitting in one small village or one small town, or in one masjid somewhere in some corner of the world. But their ta'aleem and the benefit of their ilm and knowledge and their taqwa, it went far and wide, and people went in search of them, that where is this person? Allah Ta'ala must make us from amongst them who has a heart that is the recipient of Allah Ta'ala's love and muhabbat. We can do a lot of things. We can make zikr upon zikr. We can make tilawat upon tilawat. We can do our tahajjud, our nafil, our ishraq, our chasht, our awwabin. And we can engage in so many other dini activities. But that doesn't necessarily mean that our heart has become the recipient of Allah Ta'ala's love. That Allah Ta'ala has come into our heart. And Allah Ta'ala's coming into the heart doesn't mean Allah Ta'ala has some kind of physical body or it is something that like a capsule you take it and put it into the heart. Allah Ta'ala doesn't have any shape, form. But it is stated that Allah Ta'ala is so great and is spaceless. You cannot confine Allah Ta'ala to any space. But the only place that Allah Ta'ala can come into are the broken hearts. A king will always choose something that is in accordance with his shan, with his greatness. If you give a king a gift of a broken tumbler, what would he think of that person? If there's a broken tumbler and this person says, oh, I'm going to give this as a gift to the king, and he's very happy and proud. Where he's going, he says, I'm going to visit King Fahad and I'm taking a gift for him. What gift have you got? He says, I've got a broken tumbler for him. But look at Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Ana inda munkasiratil qulub. Allah Ta'ala says, I am close to those hearts which are broken, which are shattered. Those hearts which are shattered in my love. Allah Ta'ala says, those are the hearts that I am in there. That the person was tempted into so many different things. Temptation all round, and especially in our society, in our country, in our bazaars and marketplaces, our newspapers and media, everywhere there's nothing but temptation towards sin. Now this young person, he says, no, come what may, but I'm going to restrain myself from every kind of haram. I'm not going to engage in it in the secrets, in privacy of my home, in my private life, where nobody is watching me at that time. I'm not going to engage in it too, just as I'm staying away from it outside. So now this heart becomes shattered, and Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala's noor and rahmat and tajalli then comes into these broken hearts. For his home, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala chooses these broken hearts, the hearts which have been shattered for his love. Therefore he says, kis kaam ka wo dil hai jis dil mein tu na ho. How many times did we take stock of our hearts, that what is in our hearts? Kis kaam ka wo dil hai jis dil mein tu na ho, kis kaam ka wo gul hai jis gul mein bu na ho. What is the sense of that artificial flower? At the most, it will be a little bit of pleasure it will give to the eyes. But when the person brings it close to his nose, there's no fragrance in it. So for benefiting from the Ahlullah, that is one of the conditions. That first of all, that person himself must be from the Ahlullah. He must have fragrance. He must be a fragrant flower. Then when that fragrance is coming out of that flower, then those people who are receiving, their sinuses must not be clogged. Because if the sinuses are clogged, you won't benefit again. There is fragrance in the flower, but the person's sinuses are clogged. He can't smell anything. Whether it is a bad smell or good smell, he doesn't have any kind of sense. So what that means is that the person must have aqidat and muhabbat and azmat also. He must not have any kind of prejudice. He must sit with an open mind in the majlis of the Ahlullah. And he must sit with the intention of receiving that tajalli and that noor of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala which is descending in those hearts. Because when they speak, when we speak, what comes out of our mouths is just words. But when those who have got Allah ta'ala in their hearts, when they speak in simple language. They don't speak in philosophical language. Because for the purpose of Islam, you don't need philosophical language. In simple language they speak. But because it is coming out from those hearts in which Allah Ta'ala's muhabbat is, so those words come out in a capsule of Allah Ta'ala's muhabbat and love. In this world, our capsules are made of gelatin. Our capsules, most of it is gelatin. They make those capsules. And the medication is put in there for ease of taking. But the words of the Ahlullah, they come out in the capsule of Allah Ta'ala's muhabbat, Allah Ta'ala's love, Allah Ta'ala's azmat, Allah Ta'ala's ma'rifat, Allah Ta'ala's yaqeen, Allah Ta'ala's closeness, and the love of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The noor of Gumbad-e-Khazra, the noor of Medina Sharif. So those words which come out in that capsule, then that goes through our ears and it goes down into our hearts. So when we hear that dil se jo baat nikalti hai dil par asar karti hai, it is a common saying, dil se jo baat nikalti hai dil par asar karti hai, that which comes out from the heart has an effect on hearts. So that is what it means, that because they have those kind of hearts, our hearts are filthy, dirty. What do we have in our hearts? Malice, greed, pride, evil passions and desires. But again, we must not be mistaken and don't misunderstand that evil passions and desires, if it comes in the heart, it doesn't mean that this person is a fasiq and is a gunegar and is a sinful person. If it just comes, one is to bring it purposely and the other is that it just comes by the way. It's a passing show. Many times I've given that example of the national highway. That the mind is a national highway, the heart is a national highway. So many times you've heard that example, that if you have to go on the street on a national road, national highway, then you'll find trucks, buses, cars, and in India and other places you'll even find donkey carts. And even here sometimes when you are traveling, then the person says, put the accelerator down. Why? He says, because the truck in front full of pigs. Don't they say that? But now you can't stop them. Now you can't go on the national highway and say that, no, this national highway we are not going to allow any truck that's carrying donkeys or pigs. It's a national highway. They got the right to go. But the person who stops that truck and say that, what a beautiful view now. Why are you moving so fast, oh you driver of this truck that's got pigs in there? Why are you moving so fast? How much of enjoyment I am getting in watching you. Nauzubillah. So then we'll say, now this person is, he requires some adjustment of the screws in his head. So those thoughts when they come, let them go past. Don't entertain them. Don't welcome them. Don't lay out a tablecloth for them. Don't tell them that you are very pleasing to me and dear to me and how long I was waiting for you to come in my mind. Just let them go past. Occupy the mind immediately in something else that is beneficial, useful. Even though it may be related to the person's business activity or it may be to anything that is permissible, halal and mubah, then take the mind there, because the mind cannot concentrate on two things equally at the same time. Do some calculations. Now you can't be doing calculations whilst you are at the same time entertaining those thoughts, especially calculations. So those who are in schools or colleges and you have to do some maths, then think up of some formulas that you had to learn, which you may have forgotten. For women folk, we tell them, start thinking of some recipe ingredient which you forgot, and your cake was a flop. So which was that recipe? Which was that ingredient? In other words, anything that is permissible and mubah, occupy your mind immediately in that and let that thought go past. If you are going to fight it, then it's not going to go. So just the thought coming doesn't make a person sinful. But if he entertains it, then of course now he is heading for problems. If there is a live wire, some electrician was working here and he left one wire live. Now if you are sitting so far away, then will that live wire affect you? It's not going to affect you. But now if you go close and you say, but why did he leave it here? But see how beautiful it's looking and see that color of the cord, there's red, green, blue. So let me go and touch it. So now when he goes to touch it, he's going to shock him. So those thoughts now, don't touch them, let them go past. Otherwise they're going to shock. So for peace of mind, let them go past. Now for example, a person is fasting. Now when he opens his fridge, there's falooda in there, there's custard there, there's cold drinks there, and there's other beautiful preparations in there. And he's thirsty also, he's hungry also. Now when you open the fridge and looked at those things, and thought of eating or thought of drinking, but he didn't drink and he didn't eat, does his fast break? Will his fast break if he just looks at it and he just thought of eating it, but he didn't eat it? His fast is not going to break. So in the same way, if just the thought came, he doesn't become a fasiq or a sinner or a murtad or a shaitan. But yes, now if he entertains it and he wants to go ahead and he wants to carry out that action, then that is where now there will be an objection. Now he will become sinful because he's undertaking that action. So let those thoughts come and go. Shaitan is going to keep whispering, as last night I mentioned, that they are like those dogs that are at the gates of people. Now if you have to ring, if you have to go to somebody's house and that huge bulldog there, it is barking. So that person would be a silly person that if he also starts barking back at the dog. He says, if you can bark, I can bark louder than you. What that person must do is ring the bell and the owner will come out and he will silence the dog. So ring the bell to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, this shaitan is whispering and wants to take me on the wrong line. Oh Allah, you silence shaitan and open my doors, open your door for me to enter. Now we were discussing taqleelu ta'am. Inshallah, if Allah ta'ala wills, we will continue, but just as a change of... Yeah. If a person is on his way to the toilet, also he can go inside the shower and have a shower and come away. But others have also given the permissibility for Jummah day, especially for Jummah, with the niyat of sunnat ghusl. If the person is going, then there is permissibility. So make use of that fatwa, and you can. But you must not delay. It must not be that the person is taking ghusl for 1 hour. You must just go quickly, have a quick shower and come away back into the atiqah. We have one shower upstairs and one downstairs. So two at a time can go and finish up before Jummah. But the person that can avoid it, there's nothing wrong with it. He's not going to get any sin. But if he wants to, then it's permissible. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us all the tawfiq of amal. May Allah ta'ala light up our hearts with his nur, with his tajalli. And Allah ta'ala make us of the true ahle dil. There's a change of program of Saturday. On Saturday, instead of 12 to 1, we'll be having it after Zohar, inshallah. Because most probably, but I'll announce it by Saturday, most probably might not be having the Sunday majlis because it's 27th night, and I want you to be fresh for the night. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us all the tawfiq, bless us with the best of dunya and akhirat, remove the difficulties, hardships and the problems of the entire ummat. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillah rabbil alamin. Get ready for Zohar Salat.